Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Time to look outside our borders, in it, I suppose, if you like, other people's problems. Jonathan De Burka Butler is here once again. Jonathan,
Sean, how are you getting on, you?
Right, Nepal, we're going to go to first. They've got a new prime minister.
Yeah, it's a new prime minister, and it's the first female prime minister. So this is a former Supreme Court Chief Justice, Sushila Karki, excuse me, and she is 73 years of age, so she's been waiting a long time to get into this role. I think she comes from a bit of a political family, but she's seen to have a bit of a clean background, and she is going in there as the interim prime minister, right? So there's elections due in March of next year, right? And the reason I'm telling you all that is because in recent weeks, Nepal has been going through a fair bit of turmoil, right? So it all started a few months ago when there was a campaign, an online campaign. Videos started to come out on social media of politicians' kids spending a lot of money and going abroad. And people began to question, you know, where are they getting all this cash from? Because we're a very poor country and, you know, a lot of us aren't doing very well, high rates of unemployment and all the rest of it. So people began to launch campaign online with the hashtag NepoKid, all right? And that grew to such an extent that the government thought it would be a clever idea to shut down social media platforms. So they shut down 26 social media platforms, right, in total. I didn't know there was 26 existed, to be honest with you, but there you go, including WhatsApp, Instagram and Facebook. People didn't like that, obviously, particularly young people who were affected by the social media ban and also the fact that they can't get houses, Sean, and they can't get jobs. So they took to the streets. It's in classic style. It started in universities. They took to the streets and it really grew, right? And it grew into something bigger, even outside of the capital, Kathmandu, where people were just tired of, are just tired of corruption and the heavy handedness of governments in this particular case. And it got violent, right? So when I first came across this story about 7 or 8 days ago, the numbers of people who had died was in the teens. At the end of all of this, we had over 50 people who were killed in clashes with police. So it's quite, it was quite tumultuous, if you will. So the government were kicked out as a result, right? They were forced to resign. This was after the mob had set fire to government buildings and the like. And this new interim government has come in, and we'll have to see what happens now. The situation has calmed down, but the police are still out on the streets monitoring what's going on.
Yeah, is that what the protesters were looking for the Prime Minister to resign? Were there talks with them or with their representatives?
Yeah, so they were looking for that particular government to be kicked out, and I believe that the military and the leaders of these various movements, one of them being called the Gen Z movement, would you believe, came up with an agreement that was rubber stamped by the president and the prime minister, Sharma Oli, who I think was only there for about maybe a year to 18 months. He decided that he would resign, and he's done so. And this new prime minister is in place.
Yeah. Now, have there been repeated issues with corruption among politicians?
Well, there's a sense that there is. I mean, it should be said that, you know, anytime you read these reports, it's always alleged corruption, which basically means that they haven't been caught yet.
Yeah.
So you'd have to feel that there are high levels. I have to say, I didn't look at there's indexes that you can look at, corruption indexes and all, like there's bodies that look at that. I didn't look to see what they kind of score in that in the world. But I imagine that, you know, the people who went out had a legitimate gripe, or at least they feel they did.
And this one, Sushila Karki, she's squeaky clean and
She seemed to be. I think there was something about her when she was the Supreme Court Chief Justice. There was an impeachment incident during her 11 months there, but I don't know the details of that.
Yeah.
But for now, she's a sort of a stopgap until they hold elections in March of next year.
Okay, we shall see. Right, Myanmar we're going to next. An airstrike there has killed 19 high school students.
Yeah, this is a country we haven't looked at for a while.
Yeah.
And to my shame, I should probably say, in many ways, because this civil war has been going on since 2021. Little bit of background, as you know, there was a military junta there from 1962 to 2011. Then Aung San Suu Kyi came back and the military said, OK, we'll give you, you know, a little bit of democracy. Some people will argue that they kind of backed her into a corner and she was being manipulated or she didn't do as well as she should have.
Yeah.
And certainly the international support that she used to have is now gone.
Yeah.
So whether they did a number on her or not, time will only tell, I think. But she is no longer there. And there was a military coup in 2021. So the military are back in power. The difference this time is that when the military came back into power in 2021, there was widespread protests, right? Various different military groups that were simply looking for a return to democracy, but also smaller independent or groups that were looking for independence said, we've seen this before, we're not going to let it go back. And so they've been virtually in a civil war since 2021. Now, not all of the groups that are fighting, and what's scary about this, not all the groups that are fighting against the military government there are cohesive, and they're not necessarily...
They're fighting for their own little patch, if you like.
So it potentially is very dangerous, even when the military, if and when the military leave power, okay? And the amount of power that they have at the moment is quite minimal. They only control about 20% of the territory, right? So, but there's no sign of them letting go. So anyway, it's a tinderbox, to be honest. But in all of this, there's one particular state, which is Rakhine State, which we've spoken about quite a bit. It's up in the northwest. It's where the Rohingya are based. But there's an army up there called the Arakan Army, who've been very successful in taking territory off the Myanmar military government. And the military government obviously aren't very happy about that. And in this latest attack, they seem to have targeted two high schools in a small town called Kayokta. And they have killed 19 children, effectively. Now, the ages of these people who died were between 15 and 21. So some of them children, some of them over 18. Yeah. But let's face it, very young. And there's no explanation as to why this was done. And it's disgraceful.
Yeah. These kids were sleeping there at the time. Is that when this happened?
So this was in a high school. There are two private high schools. They're obviously boarding schools. And it happened around midnight. I think it was last Friday week when it happened. And the kids were asleep. So no warning whatsoever. Just landed two 500-pound bombs on them. Gone.
Okay, so it couldn't be ascribed to they made a mistake or it was the wrong target. It seems quite deliberate.
That is a fair enough point. But they haven't made a statement yet as to anything.
Yeah.
They've given no reason or what the rationale. They haven't said, you know, we think that the Arakan army were maybe, who they're fighting against, were maybe hiding in the schools or anything like that. They said nothing.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. South Africa I'm going to go to next. This is an interesting ruling and funny, I had to go to court for it, but a man can take his wife's surname.
Yes, so this is according to the Constitutional Court in South Africa, and it's a victory for two couples who brought the case. Now, it should be said that they originally brought the case to a district court who agreed with them, but they said, well, we need to copper fasten this, so we're going to go to the Constitutional Court and get it. Make sure that's changed in legislation and the like. So this was a man by the name of Henry van der Merwe, who wanted to take the surname of his wife, Jana Jordan, while another man by the name of Andreas Bornman wanted to hyphenate his surname so he could introduce Donnelly into it, which is the surname of his wife, Jess Donnelly Bornman. So what's interesting here is that she was able to hyphenate the name.
But he wasn't.
But he wasn't.
Yes.
So now their argument was that basically the law was archaic, and that it, more importantly, that it violated equality rights that were enshrined in the Constitution post-apartheid in 1994, I think, okay? And the Constitutional Court said, absolutely. In fact, it was a great opportunity for the Constitutional Court to basically have a dig at, you know, colonial powers who, you know, came along and ruined everything in Africa. And they made sure that they did that in their judgment. They basically noted that in many African cultures, and I'm quoting here, women retained their birth names after marriage and children often took their mother's clan name. With the arrival of European colonizers and Christian missionaries and the imposition of Western values, that all changed. Mm. So they were saying, we're going back to the old ways, so you can have your... So you can have your wife's name if you wish to do so.
Yeah, because you would have thought in South Africa, the Rainbow Nation, yeah. There's so many different tribal groupings, sure. And ethnicities there that would have been recognised up till now.
Yeah, but obviously it was written into law during apartheid, you see, and that law had to be changed, I suppose. And so this is what these guys have done. It's interesting their names, though, Van der Merwe and Bornman. I don't know if they're too... They sound kind of Afrikaans, those names, don't they? So it's interesting that they're going down that route.
But presumably no one seems to have opposed this.
Nobody has. No, yeah. There was two ministries that, departments that would have been involved, but they didn't. They actually supported the whole thing. So it's had support all the way along, which presumably is the reason they felt, let's take it to the Constitutional Court and rubber stamp it.
Yeah, so it is now law. Does it have to be enshrined in law now?
Well, I was going to correct you there. Yeah. The Parliament have to amend, apparently, the Births and Deaths Registration Act, along with the regulations that go with that. So it's not law yet, but... I suppose, so they'll have to do something around that.
Yeah, all right, okay. Mm. Right, the US we're going to go to next. Perhaps this is a kind of a trend we're seeing in many other areas of American life. NASA has now banned Chinese nationals from working for them.
Yeah, so they're saying that they're blocking Chinese citizens, even with valid US visas, from the facility. So that effectively means that they can't contribute to research or work for them anymore. Now, they had been for a while barred from being employed full-time at the agency, but they could work as contractors. And I think, more importantly, they could work there as part of a university program, research exchange and that kind of thing. I think that's going to hurt a lot of people, actually. Given the size of how many people are in NASA, so there's like employs 18,000 people. It's huge.
Yeah.
It's not just a few people tinkering away on, you know, rockets and the like. So it's really big. And the timing of it is interesting, right? So the date of this announcement was a while ago, September the 5th. But it came 2 days after a Senate Commerce Committee warned that the Chinese were catching up and were going to beat the United States back to the moon, right? So this new Cold War, you could say, is starting again, and the moon is central to it. So 2 days after that announcement, you know, or that Senate hearing, they make this announcement. That's very bizarre.
Yeah, and but has NASA given a specific reason why it doesn't want Chinese nationals?
Security. Yeah,
right.
Security.
Okay.
And they're basically saying, and they're worried underneath it all, that the Chinese advances in science and in this space are, you know, they're getting ahead of them, and they don't want them to.
Yeah. Is there any evidence that they are?
I think they're catching up all right.
Yeah.
And they certainly have ambitions to get there. They have said that. I mean, they're saying that the ambitions to get there is for all of humanity. Whereas the US
That's
are
what
sort
they
of,
all say, yes.
Of course. Whereas the US are saying that they don't want anybody else to dominate the space because it would be dangerous.
It was a giant leap for mankind, as Neil Armstrong said before he plunked an American flag into the not a world flag, we all noticed.
Yeah.
And it's a curious thing. There is an international space station, but the Chinese astronauts aren't allowed to go onto that.
Under US law, they're apparently not allowed to go on that. They block everything they can.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things.
But Russians are.
I think so. I'll have an interesting thing about Russians in a few minutes in the United States. But another aspect of this NASA thing is that earlier this year, they announced that they were getting rid of 2,000 employees. Very high-level employees, apparently. So how they're going to get to the moon by firing people and that, I don't know.
Yeah, well, one could argue perhaps there might be a bit of politics here in that the Trump administration has looked at cutting NASA's funding and now NASA are saying, well, we got rid of all the Chinese because we know they're dodgy. We know you think that, Mr. President, but they're going to beat us. Maybe those two moves hand in hand were to encourage a bit more funding. Right, Albania we're going to go to next. And they've appointed, well, Now, to be clear, this isn't a minister for artificial intelligence.
Nope.
This is an artificial intelligence minister.
Yes, an artificial intelligence who is now a minister for public procurement. Diella is her name. And apparently in Albanian, that means the sun. Now, this is the brainchild of, I have to say, one of my favourite politicians, a guy by the name of Edi Rama, who's been Albanian Prime Minister for years now. He actually won a fourth term there in May. And before that, he was the mayor of the capital, Tirana, and he was the one who came up with the idea of, oh, look at all those grey communist buildings, let's paint them. Mm-hmm. He's a very, very interesting character, and he actually announced this at a cabinet reshuffle, which I think was brilliant. He said, okay, I'm letting everybody know that you've lost your job and some of you have got a job, and on top of that, we have a new Minister for Public Procurement, this Diella, which is an AI. And he's basically saying that the tenders now, public tenders, are going to be 100% incorruptible, and where every public fund that goes through the tender procedure is going to be 100% legible. And it's a stroke of genius, because a problem that the EU has all the time with Albania is the level of corruption there.
Okay? Yeah,
they're saying that it's in public administration and in public procurement. And Edi Rama is saying, okay, well, what we'll do is we'll streamline the whole thing. If you want to work for the Albanian government, you put in a tender, the AI will decide who's going to get it and who's not going to get it, and there'll be no human interruptions whatsoever, no human involvement.
Okay.
Now, at some point, I'm thinking to myself, at some point, surely a human has to get involved. How are they going to guide this AI to make the correct choices? I don't know how they're going to do it.
Who's providing the AI technology, the software?
Good question.
Is it Chinese, perhaps?
I don't know.
Find a lot of Chinese companies suddenly getting commissions there.
I'm not 100% sure, to be honest with you.
Right, so he hasn't kind of fleshed out the details of it yet.
No.
And is it legal under Albanian law, I wonder? Because it sounds like the sort of thing that could be challenged, that, you know, by implication, a human has to be
the person who makes the decision. I'm not sure. Could it be challenged? I mean, I don't know how to answer that, Sean.
I wonder, like, is he serious or is there a little bit of tongue in his cheek?
He's deadly serious. And in fact, this AI is already known to people in Albania because I can't believe I said she, but anyway, the avatar or the thing that is responsible for the e-Albania platform, which is the allows citizens to access all the government services digitally.
Right.
So she's got a little avatar where she's dressed in, you know, traditional Albanian clothes and the like. Now, I don't know if she's going to be turning up at cabinet meetings or if she has a vote or anything like that. But this is what they're looking at anyway.
OK. And not just giving out tenders, deciding on tenders. Will she be actually hiring people as well?
As far as I know, she'll be the one who makes the decision.
Right. OK.
Now, I don't know if she'll be the one giving them a call and saying it's your job and, overseeing the works of the building of the children's hospital in Albania.
Well, exactly. That kind of thing.
Might be a good idea.
Yeah. Who do they go and bitch to about stuff?
Yeah.
Right. So what should we look out for over the next week or so?
Yeah, plenty coming up. So obviously tomorrow, the greatest day of Donald Trump's life, when he will meet King Charles and address a state banquet there. Should be wonderful. And I'm hoping that King Charles doesn't fall asleep during the speech that Trump gives. So fair play to him if he doesn't.
That's unlikely.
Anyway, Russia then hosts the Intervision Song Contest.
Ah, yes.
Which is a revival of the old communist competition that was in various countries, Poland and the Czech Republic and the like. And it's interesting, one of the contestants in it is actually the United States of America.
Yeah. Now, apparently, because it's kind of a private thing, it's just some randomer they've picked. Mm. But the guy who's singing, representing the United States, so it was a huge rumor that it was one of Michael Jackson's children. It hasn't been confirmed one way or the other, but it adds a little frisson to the whole thing.
Okay, yeah. I'll let that one go. And then on Sunday, September the 21st, there's a constitutional referendum in Guinea. I keep saying Guinea for some reason. I don't know why. Which is basically a power grab by military ruler who's there at the moment.
Right. Okay. That's all to look out for the next week. Jonathan, thanks a million as ever. Jonathan DeBooker of Atlaveri.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.